Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
10 minutes after 8 o'clock, and Bill Rock, you got it right one more time. It's another Friday together here on the John Gambling Show. Mr. Mayor, welcome. Good morning.
Are you running on Sunday?
I am not. I might actually watch it on TV, but even that's exhausting.
They say something like 330 million people
around the world, probably
around the world, will be watching on television.
Did I hear you say, or somebody said, that this is the biggest single event in the city of New York on a given year?
I am sure that it is the biggest economic impact. Why? Let's say it's a World Series game. Most of the people that go to World Series game are people that go during the year, have tickets, or live in the area. There's some tourists that come here and they come for the game and then they go home. Marathoners tend to, number one, they come from all around the world. Number two, they tend to bring their families. Number three, they tend to spend time here. They'll stay a week, a few days before and a few days afterwards. And so the economic impact is enormous. Also, it is such a big event. You get enormous publicity around the world. We claim something like 47,000 runners from 135,000 countries in all 50 states. And
no, 135 countries, not 1,000.
135 countries, 50 states, sorry. 2 million spectators. Economic impact, 340 million last year. There is a proposal.
A little revenue to the Treasury.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
taxes,
a lot of people's jobs, you know. I mean, it may not be just one event that keeps your job,
sure,
but everything a little bit helps. And while it would be a big logistical challenge, there is talk of people wanting to, the Roadrunners maybe want to extend it, make it a two-day race.
What do you think about that?
You know, it is such a big economic thing. Clearly, Saturday is different than Sunday because a lot more people shop on Saturday, so the logistics are much more difficult. Maybe you do it in a different route or something. I don't know. I think the answer is you shouldn't just say no. You should think about it and talk about it. You know, as Patty Harris always tells me, there's no bad ideas.
No bad ideas. Now,
I mean, some of them are stupid, but they're no bad.
Are you all set? You have the finger exercise to pull the trigger?
It's going to go off on schedule, I can guarantee you. I will be at the beginning. I will be at the end. And I will have the fastest time of anybody that does that.
Yeah, exactly. The fact you will not have your sneakers on, however.
A minor problem. I won't be going on the same. What was the person, a woman who was
Rosie Ruiz.
Who remembers Rosie Ruiz?
Got took the subway, I think.
You know, there's a story someplace in one of the papers about the history of the marathon. The guy who ran it one year, they sent him in the wrong route coming into the park, and he had to go back and around, and he still won it, just barely, but he still won it. I mean,
That's a great story, right?
I mean, there was a number of different things that have happened. So, you know, there's a lot of history. Sports is good about that. Sports, you want to have things you can talk about. Don't you remember what happened then? And this is comparing one runner to another, one year to another.
No, it's
statistics
great.
It's amazing. Mathematics are the biggest part of sports in many senses.
Two of my three sons ran in it.
Are they really?
It was both on the same day, and they were both.
We have
fantastic.
A whole bunch of people in the city hall running.
Yeah, Dennis Walcott's running.
Tom Farley, our health commissioner. Both of these guys are thin as a rail, exercise all the time. Watch what they eat. Watch what they drink. You and I could take good lessons from them.
Yes, somehow I can't see them. They're fuzzy. be that as it may. All right. Your friends up here in Zuccotti Park.
I came by this morning, just a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Lots of tents, lots of people.
Has your patience run out?
Yesterday, I saw about 50 people. They marched from Zuccotti Park up to a police precinct. I think it might have been the 50th precinct. I'm not sure what the precinct was. We had a bunch of cops on motor scooters, walked peacefully on the sidewalk, behaved themselves, walked back. I don't think the word patience is the right thing. I think we still have the following problem. People have a right to protest. They don't have a right to destroy neighborhoods. And some of them are trying to destroy the neighborhood, an awful lot of them are not. And I think the answer to your question is our patients, we're not going to tolerate some of the things that have gone on, and we're doing something about that. But it We have to understand the laws and the implications. And if you see what happened like in Oakland,
horrible.
5,000 people in the streets burning, we are not going to have that here. I will not. That's not going to happen here. And I don't want to. I want to make sure that we do not have that here. It's a nice way to phrase it. But anybody that thinks that we are doing nothing is wrong. Anybody that thinks we're going to tolerate behavior that's not protected is wrong. Anybody that thinks we're not going to do things to try to help the neighborhood. For example, we took down the barriers all along Wall Street. Stores were happy about that. People went rushing into the streets. We put the barriers back. Bottom line is, if you don't want to have barriers, you have to behave. And we will continue to do that. And I think, as you remember, 2 weeks ago, we removed the gasoline and generators, which is dangerous.
Have they stayed out, pretty much, as far as you know?
We send fire marshals through every day, yes. We're not, we may be dumb, but we're not stupid. We're very careful to make sure that, yes. And we're trying to address the cases where people go off into an alley to relieve themselves and that sort of thing. We're not going to tolerate that.
I will tell you, because I experienced that almost every morning for a number of weeks, that has, in my route that I walk, that has stopped. I have not seen that in the last week or so.
I mean, look, you've got liability, you've got implications on people's businesses. I'm concerned about businesses in the neighborhood. I'm concerned about every industry in the city, and we have a responsibility to protect that. At the same time, we have to deal with the law, and we will do it. You know, we still have lawsuits going on about the Republican National Convention. How long ago that was?
I can't even remember. It was so long ago.
A decade. And we're in court all the time over it, or cases are going on. Where you get sued. So you got to be very careful. Everybody says, oh, just go do this. If it were that simple.
Maybe
you wouldn't have the country you have with the freedom of speech.
Well, that's absolutely the case. But as we are seeing, that if you let these things go, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, you let these things go and you end up with an Oakland.
Or if you handle them the wrong way, you end up with an Oakland. At the moment, Zuccotti Park is full, but were you accosted on the way by?
I was screamed at the other morning.
Well, that's because they didn't like your show that day. Who did you have on?
Believe me.
Question, who did you have on that morning? On Fridays, you'd never get screamed at.
Have you seen the sign out front on Broadway that says, I'm one of the zoo creatures from that idiot John Gambling's radio show? Right there on the
Did
front.
You pay them for that advertisement,
no,
or is this just what's called free advertisement on social media?
It's called free advertisement on social media.
Here's somebody's handing this. I'd much picture. Rather be a so-called zoo creature than an oblivious, elitist shill of a radio show host named John Gambling. And they spelled your name right?
They got everything right.
Yeah. But the only thing they didn't put down is, talk radio.
No, they didn't put the call letters right.
WR710. I'd go back and talk to this guy.
Maybe next time. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. Let me take a break right here. Before we do that break, let me remind you.
When I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you. And the way you look tonight.
Mr. Sinatra, Bumper Music Friday, Mr. Mayor. I bet you like that one.
I like Frank Sinatra. Yeah. He hasn't recorded lately, but you know.
Oh, stop it.
Now, Frank Sinatra sang from when to when? When
was it? Early 40s through, I guess, the 90s, before he died. He was still there occasionally.
Yeah, funny thing is, I don't think of him as my parents' generation music. It was sort of my generation, although, Little Richard Rainwater Under the Hood was where I started in the music world and following.
Richard Rainwater Under the Hood.
Yeah, sure, late 50s, come
goodness
on.
Goodness gracious. Maybe we should have that Bumper Music Friday, Jimmy. What do you think?
In the car I have the 50s and the 60s and sometimes the 70s on. And, my kids have a whole different, and our parents had a whole different.
That's the beauty of it.
It's some of the old music. Changing. Just great. And I've always liked Frank Sinatra.
Taxi Summit, I understand later this morning that you're representing representatives and or maybe yourself and the governor and
no,
others?
I'm not going to be there, but David Yaske, our taxi and limousine commissioner, will be there.
Does this look a little iffy? I mean,
all I know is, and I haven't talked to the governor in weeks about it, he assured me he thought there should be a few minor changes, and use the word minor a number of times, and that he would get it done. And he knows how important it is to the city to provide taxi service in all the boroughs, and four boroughs and half of Manhattan haven't had it, don't have any taxi service, and also how important it is to our budget to sell more medallions and get another $1 billion in revenue. That's a big deal over the next 2 years. That's a lot of jobs that are on the
Governor
line.
Governor even this week said that the state budget is looking bleaker than it did.
I will stand with the governor anytime he wants. I'm sympathetic. There's no easy answers. The public wants services, doesn't want cuts, doesn't want to pay for them. You've got a group of people saying, no taxes, we got to cut taxes. You've got a group of people that's saying, no cuts in services, we've got to increase services. And it's the governor's job to find a ways for the state to get through that, and the mayor's job to find a ways to get through it for the city, and the city is a very big part of the state budget. And I will. The governor probably doesn't need me, but if people are going to ask, and I'm a supporter.
So the budgetary problems are still looking. Are you on track from your estimates with your estimates?
I don't know how to answer that. Our estimates we had made conservative, and I don't know about the states. City has made conservative estimates of tax revenues, and as of a few days ago last time I talked to Mark Page about it, we are roughly on schedule, a few above, but basically in the context we're talking about, on schedule. Doesn't mean that's going to be true going forward, because sometimes economic activity doesn't impact tax revenues for a quarter or two quarters. So you don't know. There are all sorts of provisions where companies pay in advance their taxes based on what they think the revenues are going to be, but that doesn't mean that that's what their income's going to be, and they may in fact get money back or have to pay more. And typically, because nobody wants a penalty if you have to pay more, people always overpay in terms of estimated taxes in advance. So it's not likely that we're going to get more money. It's likely that we'll get less or the same. And, the chaos in the markets, the chaos in Europe, the lack of action in Washington is all very worrisome. And who knows what's going to come out of Washington. I'm going to talk about that this coming week. But, if they cut back things in Washington, that has an impact on our city budget. And some people say, well, we'll make it up. We cannot make it up. The governor's budget you talked about, to the extent he's got to balance his budget, and his state's tax revenues are worse than they had projected, then that's going to make it harder for us to get our fair share. I've said repeatedly, I think we were treated very unfairly last time. This time the governor has said his number one priority was pension fund relief. That if he can get that done, that'll be a big thing. And also he'd made a commitment on education funds, which are very important to us. But we did get cut 100% in revenue sharing last time, and every other county got cut 3%. We got cut $800+ million in education money, which we had to make up. We just don't have the money to make up those kinds of things anymore. So we're working with the unions. We're working with the state. We're working with the federal government. Most importantly, we're trying to build a tax base for the future. This week, over an announcement about the first big building going up on the west side, Hudson River Yards, big deal. That will create an enormous number of jobs over the next 10-15 years.
How many buildings are planned or potentially
five or seven, something like that, mm-hmm. including an art center, which would be a very big deal for that side of Manhattan, and all because it's all going to work because the city had the foresight to put money
seven.
In with the number seven extension, which the state did not do. Larry Silverstein talked to him the other day. He finally got full financing for tower number four. There was a question as to whether he would be able to get that. He got it, so that's going to continue to go up. The Calatrava Port Authority Transit and the Fulton Avenue Transit Center are both, you know, going up. You can see steel coming up above the ground, way above the ground in the case of one of them. And, you know, throughout the city, there's an awful lot more construction. You notice it in, there have been pieces of land that have been cleared and boarded up for the last couple of years in places, not just in Manhattan, but in other boroughs, and maybe in all the boroughs. I'm trying to think of where I've seen it. Have I seen everything? I think so. And all of a sudden, there's construction going on. You know, the backhoes digging, and last night I drove by one. The cement trucks were backing in. They were putting in the foundation. So things are getting better in that context. The big problem the country has is we have this enormous deficit, which is out of control, and someday is going to really come back to bite. And while the economy is better, I think, than most people think, it's companies doing more with less. And actually, real wages for people who are employed, there's some signs they're starting to go up. And I think they will go up. Why? Because those people are becoming more productive. Companies are learning how to do more with less. So the individual worker is producing more, and that's the way you justify greater compensation. The problem is, if you don't have a job, then you've got a real problem. And it's for the first time.
Because the mass production jobs are disappearing just because of automation and computers.
Anything that's repetitive can get automated. Anything where you don't have to be where the customer is can potentially move. So, you know, if you say, well, which is a better job, being a plumber or writing software code? You can make a very good case that the plumber has a lot greater pricing power. The plumber has to be in your neighborhood. You can't go and find a plumber on the other side of the world. Whatever wages for plumbers on the other side of the world doesn't matter. So the plumber has some pricing power, whereas software code can be written anyplace. It really doesn't make any difference. And, you know, a lot of it is people say, oh, jobs are moving out. There are really very few jobs that have moved overseas. What's happening is other countries are developing. Things that's great for those countries, great for humanity, but not good for our competitiveness. And the only ways you do this, you have to find ways to make American workers more productive if you want them to have jobs and have higher paying jobs. Otherwise, they won't have jobs or the jobs will go elsewhere. And we don't have the job training kinds of programs that other countries have. We worried too much, I think, about the disincentives for growth rather than what we need for incentives. Everybody's yelling and screaming about this loan for the solar company and the president's...
Solyndra
and the president's got tied up. And, you know, everybody's yelling and screaming. It's all politics. And I don't know whether it's the right thing to do. Wasn't there or not. But I can tell you this, cutting funding for National Institute of Health, NIH, cutting funding for basic research, this is really, as we say in Gaelic, mashugana, because that is the future. And that is something the government should be doing. That is appropriate function for the government, to make the kinds of investments in basic research, I don't think necessarily in companies, but in basic research, and then have companies going on. And you can say, oh, that's not the purpose of government. Well, maybe you don't think so, but every other government's doing it.
Think about the space industry. I mean, and then
Let me just defend the president for 1 second on the space industry. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but there's a lot of evidence that the private sector really is. There's three or four companies that are getting ready to have man-capable launches to the space station.
No, but I was talking about basic research that came out of the Apollo program and the Gemini
program.
We're stopping all of this.
We made all this investment, and we're not doing anything with it. The big super collider is in Europe, not here. We had one we were building in Texas. We lost our courage, and we walked away from that. You don't know what's going to come out of those kinds of things. It's easy to say it's throwing money down a rabbit hole, whatever the expression is. But government has to protect this country. We have to invest in education. We have to invest in basic research. Those things matter an awful lot more than most of the things that they're talking about in Washington.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hold on here a second. Let me take a half-hour break again. Remind you, we got a couple of lines open, 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for the mayor before we finish up. We've run a little long here, but let's get to the half-hour break.
Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
Love and marriage. Frank Sinatra, Bumper Music Friday here on the John Gambling Show today.
What do you want? Poverty.
poverty.
How did we get for the segue?
It was your segue, sir. But a story on front pages of the New York Times this morning.
It is two things. One, the federal government has just started using the same measure of poverty that we created here in New York City, created by a guy named Mark Levitan, who really is a genius. The old measure of poverty didn't take into account a couple things. One, cost of living differences between regions. Number two, how people spend their money. You used to spend a much greater percentage of money on food. Today it's a lot less. There are other things, taking care of children and a variety of other things that you spend your money on. And also, for all of the public reaching into their pocket and providing help to the poor, we didn't count that in looking at whether they were still poor. I mean, if you get money, then you can live better. So if you want to know whether people can live, how much they have to live on, to not count one of their major sources of income doesn't make any sense. And you want to do that, you might as well get some credit for it and see what the numbers really are. And using the new standard, because you get different measures, what it shows for New York is that there's less poverty for kids than we thought and more poverty for seniors. But there's some big differences in cost of living between places. The other thing is there's a Brookings report, which I brought you a copy of, John. It looks like it's 1,000 pages, but it's only 30-something pages. It talks about concentrations of poverty. And while up in a nation for the nation, it's down in the Northeast and mainly down because of big declines in the South Bronx and Central Brooklyn. And what it talks about is when you have a neighborhood where everybody's poor, the kids don't have any role models, even if their parents don't value education, don't work or something, at least in some places your neighbor does, so you can see it and then maybe that'll help. New York, we don't have these concentrated centers, according to the report, the way we used to, because I keep talking about this, how diversified we are, and people live as a mixture rather than a mosaic. It is basically good news, or it gives you some comfort that we're going in the right direction.
If you are impoverished and you get the benefit of whatever services and dollars and cents that are available, are you still impoverished?
Well, it depends how much you get.
But my question is a theoretical one.
If you get enough aid from food stamps and cash assistance and that sort of thing, and you move above the poverty line, then you're not counted below the poverty line. I mean, society has to decide whether they want to help people. But if you help people, the help is real. And whether their income comes from something that you approve or you don't approve of doesn't matter. You want to know really how much do people have enough to live at a standard, whatever standard you decide, but to not count all their expenses or all their revenue sources is ridiculous. And that's what we said for a long time, and we developed this poverty measure in New York City, and now the federal government's adopted it from us.
An extraordinary,
this guy, Mark Levitan, really deserves the credit.
An extraordinary number. 45 million Americans are now on food stamps, which is...
That's the bad news. I will say there is something that's good news, and that is in order to get food stamps, you basically have to work, at least in New York City you do. And so what it is it's saying, look, if you take a job and you can't live on it, at least you're working, and then we're more inclined
to help you. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to let people starve on the streets. I think we've, as a society, decided that. You want programs that encourage people to work or reward people for doing what we ask them to do. And, you know, and there's virtually no fraud because we fingerprint and, you know, Rudy started that, and it made an enormous difference. There were people scamming the system, and we eliminated those. And because we have fingerprinting, we continue. They don't come back. You stop the fingerprinting, they come back instantly.
I know the city council wanted to get rid of that.
You know, if you work for New York City, an employee, you have to get fingerprinted. Me and everybody else, all 330,000 of our employees have to get fingerprinted. So it's not unreasonable to ask somebody who we're helping to get fingerprinted. I don't understand the argument. If you say there's no fraud, okay, so what's wrong with keeping the...
Right, you don't want to open the door to fraud.
Right, I mean, anyways.
All right, we'll have a test next Friday.
That's good.
Parking permits in neighborhoods for residents.
Argument is, You want to do you or do you not want to reserve spaces in your neighborhood for people who live in the neighborhood? Now, if you live in the neighborhood, you can say, hey, yeah, sure, why not? If you're a merchant in the neighborhood, however, you don't want people coming in and people there leaving their cars all the time. You like turnover because that's the way your customers find a parking place so they can come into your store or your place of business. And for some reason or other, the Albany, because we need Albany approval, the Albany legislature wants to get involved. Just because they have the
city council has passed the bill.
Yes. When we were working on congestion pricing, one of the arguments was, oh, people will, before the bridge, park their car and then take mass transit from there, and therefore they'll overload the neighborhoods. And so one of the things that we came to the conclusion on, all the people that worked on it, was it would make sense for residential parking to prevent that from happening so that there would not be a bad effect of congestion pricing, which, remember, was designed to keep you to leave your car at home and take mass transit and to get the money so that mass transit would be a good alternative for you, a better alternative.
Are you still in support of this or not?
I don't see... I said the other day, Joe Loda, a competent guy, is taking over the MTA after Jay Walter, a competent guy. But they don't have any money. The state continues to take money away from them. We've not made investments. So we're not building new subways other than the 2nd Avenue and the 7 Line, which is almost done.
I meant the parking permits. So would you sign the city council law?
I'm not going to get a chance. It's up to the state.
Well, I know, for the state
approves. I'm told it has no chance of passing, okay. So it's not even worth it.
How about the sanitation stickers
on the windows? If people are complaining, then we should keep doing it. I mean, don't break the law. And it's almost like, you murder your parents and then you say to the judge, but I'm an orphan, you can't put me in jail. Don't murder your parents,
analogy.
You don't have you're not an orphan. And in this case, don't break the law and you don't have to worry about it. But the sanitation department says it's even more effective than a fine. And the idea is to get you to move your car so we can clean the streets. If you don't like the law and cleaning the streets or all the side, change that. But don't go break the law.
The city was fined $70 million on Medicaid fraud, and then there was some fraud in Staten Island a week or so ago against Medicaid. This was doctors and some other people ripping them off. And then there's another thing out in Queens this week with Medicare. The fraud seems to be so rampant.
The reason that it is, or one of the reasons, in the end, bad people. The city paid, incidentally, a fine. We think that we did absolutely zero wrong. It wasn't fraud. They didn't like the fact that we had the data in one file drawer rather than another. And I'm not exaggerating. It was about that much. But to go and to lose an enormous case in court against the federal government with, could be billions of dollars, we just made a decision that it was easier and made a lot more sense to pay them. People say, go fight. Yeah, what happens if we lose? We literally did the right thing, except that it's true. The government, the form says you got to have the data over here and we had it over there. You got to have it in this order. Nobody alleges anybody did any fraud whatsoever, and it happens to be an agency very well run. These other things, the reason you see fraud is there's so much money. Healthcare is going to bankrupt us, John. There are all of these programs, and it's what I call the Willie Sutton phenomenon. You remember Willie Sutton?
Sure.
Why did you rob those banks? Because that's where the money was. Well, why is there fraud there? Because that's where the money is. And yes, the federal government and the state government and the city government, we should all watch more carefully. It's so big that I guarantee you there's always going to be some kind of fraud. I also guarantee you we're going to keep working on trying to stop it. But if as long as we are spending money, so much money, you'd say you need more controls. I'm not even sure that when you have this obligation to spend so much money in so many places, it's even possible.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got some folks on the line. We'll get to them in just a second here. Any open lines? 1, 2, 3. Yeah, we got one open. 800-321-0710.
Let's take it nice and easy. It's gonna be so easy for us to fall in love.
Frank Sinatra, Bumper Music Friday here on the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, grab your headphones right there and let us go to line number one. And Tommy in Staten Island. Go, Tommy. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. New York City is a sanctuary city for illegal aliens. If you want to raise wages and create jobs, why don't we start cracking down on these employers that that hire these illegal aliens. They work off the books. They don't pay taxes. They send their money to Mexico. Come on.
Tommy, you know, I appreciate the thought and your call. When we do the research, it turns out that that's generally not true. Their employers withhold, because the employers don't want to go to jail. So employers do pay taxes that their workers, even if they're undocumented, owe. The thing is that because of their level of employment, they do a refund, but there's no place to send the refund. So the undocumented actually generate more taxes than you'd think. I think the numbers, the estimates are something like 75% of all undocumented in the country pay taxes. And in New York City, you'd think it'd be higher because the concentration of businesses here, it probably better oversight. The unemployed also, the undocumented, tend to take jobs that nobody else will. One of the big problems, Tommy, in this country is our farm industry is just hollowing out because nobody will go into the fields and take the jobs as hard work and outdoors and long hours and low pay and that sort of thing. And when they try to pay more and open it up and get domestic workers, you know, Americans just want different kinds of jobs. Our culture, our expectations are very different. And so if you look at the jobs that illegals do in New York City, they tend to be jobs that are low paying and that nobody else wants. Now, that's not 100% true, but all the economic studies show that they are an important part of the economy and we need more immigrants, not less. And I think you're right that we shouldn't have undocumented. We should find some ways to make people part of the system, make them learn to speak English, make them learn history, you know, a variety of things you can do, pay a fine. Everybody's got different ideas, but to leave them out there is in this third sort of unconnected isn't good for anybody, and that I agree with you.
All right, Tommy. I'm sorry. Thank you. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, you've got the mayor. Go.
Good morning,
Hi.
Mayor. I have a question. I live in Country Club by Pelham Bay Park,
mm-hmm.
and I pay pretty high taxes. I could fit three cars in front of my house, but the problem is I can't get a spot because some of the neighbors have four cars and five cars, and my mom is sick. She's old. And it's very difficult. Can't they see if there's more than two cars registered per household that they could charge them or do something?
Well, I don't know. The they is us. And, you know, you probably could get the city council to pass a law like that. The trouble is that when it gets to Albany, we see that with this residential parking stuff. It's just not going to get through there. And so, you know, I can't give you any real hope. I don't think very many people have three or four cars, but clearly in some neighborhoods, the further you get away from mass transit, which is one of the problems, and you have kids living at home, yeah, you can have three or four cars. I never grew up in a family. We were lucky to have one, but I'm trying to think how many cars would max. I guess when I was in, when I came to New York, I didn't have a car at the beginning for a long time.
Most people don't.
Yeah,
no
I went
need.
For 10 years without
well,
a car.
Mass transit.
I lived right by Subway line, and Kathy doesn't. And, you know, she in her neighborhood, it's a very big deal.
It's a real big deal.
We didn't have time to do tweets.
If you can do a really fast one.
Somebody asked why fire hydrants aren't placed at street corners or bus stops, why they're in the middle of the block. It was so that the fire hoses could get to either end with less distance to go, and to move them at this point where engines are more powerful and pumps are more powerful.
Mr. Answer Man himself right here. Tweet the mayor on Fridays. You'll get yourself an answer. Have yourself a good week. Enjoy the marathon.
You too. Going to be great weather for the marathon to view it and to run in it. Good luck to everybody running.
Have fun, sir. Thank you very much. We'll see you next Friday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show.